Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Chet, and we're holding at the bottom of lines Lamed Zayin Omud Beit, three lines up from the bottom, Rami Bar Yecheskel. Rami Bar Yecheskel.
Ready? Ready again, it's a Lo Nishma for my mother, Lamed Bat Shul Yisrael. Please?
L'Aliyat Nishmata.
Amen.
Ashkechinu Shmuel, the Talmid Rav. So the last thing we learned yesterday was either Rami Bar Yecheskel. We had two different Lashonos, what it was that he added, but he added to whoever had said the original Maimer, which we had two Lashonos about, that this animal could be extremely strong in its teeth, but not have power in its legs to stand up, and that's already called a Mesukenet. Ashkechinu Shmuel, the Talmid Rav. Once Shmuel bumped into the Talmidim of Rav and asked them, "Tell me, what has Rav been teaching?" "My Omar Rav Misukenet?" "Omrulei Hochi Omar Rav." What Rav said was that a Go'a, the Tilari'i, the Kishkisha, that if the animal gives this deep moo, or it gives out feces, or even if it just wiggles its ear, all of those things are considered to be perchus, and that's sufficient to be metayer a misukenet. Omar lahuz, Shmuel said to him, "I can't believe it. Itzrcha le'la'aba la'zuzayuni." That Rav, there's a machlokas, remember we learned many times about whether this is a name of kovod that Abaya used, according to Rashi, or according to Tosis, actually that's his real name, and the name of kovod was Rav. There's Raya's lekan lekan, but in any event, Shmuel said to them, "Really, does Abba need out kidei kach, that he has to even wiggle his ear? Sha'ani omer ko she'inu dvorim sha'mita osak. Anything that is not characteristic of a movement that an animal dies as it expires is considered to be a movement that is a raya that it's alive. And what does that mean? So what is it exactly that you would call something that is part of its death? There's still two girsos over here, either shamitawasa or shamitawasa, that even a dead animal does. Well, I heard from Shmuel like this, that if its hand was bent and it straightened that hand out, that is a dover shahamita osat. That is something that is done. Of course, we saw that this is only with a behema daka. That is something that is done as part of the animal's expiring. But if it was a dover, that if it was pshuta and then kafefa, that's dvarim she'in amita osa. So if the limb was extended and the animal bends it inwards, contracts the limb, so that is not something that is done as part of the expiration. I don't understand. Isn't that a Beferish Mishnah? What's like the big deal over here? Ma'akam Ashmamak. Shmuel doesn't seem to be teaching anything new over here. That's what our Mishnah said. Behema daka shepashta yada v'lo yechzira. If the behema daka just extended its hand, but didn't retract the hand, that's not considered to be a raya that it's alive, and therefore if it's mesukenet, it's psua. She'ina elo tza'at nefesh. That's just part of what is normally takes place in expiration. But, I mean, it's clearly from there you see that if it was yichzira, that would be kosher, which is basically what Shmuel said. If the hand was extended in yichzira, it would be kosher. Not necessarily, because if you just had the Mishnah, you might have thought that the point over there was if it was kaifau pashtava or kaifala. From the Mishnah, it isn't clear what it means when it says that if it actually retracts the arm. Because that might mean that it was originally, it was retracted, and then the animal extends it and again retracts it. But maybe if it was pshuta, then shechted, and then kafafafta, maybe that alone, just the kafifa, so to bend, contract a leg is not enough. A varaya, that's why Shmuel needed to say, no, even just kafafta would be kosher. And you don't need that it has to actually first extend it and then kafafa. Okay, now, the problem is that Raf said that it's enough if you have even such things as just making the sound of a go'a, or just heitilarei, or just kishkisha ba'ozna. But the problem is that the Braita says not like that. Meitve, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Haya Rabbi Meir Omer, if an animal is go'a during the shechita, that is not considered to be a pirchus. So that seems to be a problem with go'a. Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi quotes his father, Rabbi Yossi, Afilu hitilo rei v'kishkisha biznava ein ze pirchus. We address over here every single one of the things that Rav said that are sufficient, and I don't know, it says over here that it's not true. So kasha goa agoa kasha rei rei. Fine, the element of kishkisha obviously is against the shita that we have even in our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says that it is good. Okay, so that's fine. That is exactly against Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, and it seems to be machlokes tanayim. But in any event, it is definitely a problem of goya to Rav. Here it says goa is not, and it's definitely a problem of itilarei. Well, goa goa lo kasher, because there's different levels of goa. Hoda avi kola. Rav was saying that when it was making a powerful goa, which is a deep and powerful mooing sound, that is considered to be a chiyus. Masha'in kein, the bright that it says over here, that it's not sufficient, is talking about da'ame kola. It means just a weak sound, and that is not a raya. It's not the equivalent of pirchos. And rei arei lo kasher, because we might be talking about two completely different cases. If it's shotetet, if all you have is a leakage of feces, so, I mean, that doesn't show that it's alive. On the contrary, I mean, that shows that it's dead, because basically there's no contraction now of the anal muscles. Masha inkin bimatrezet, if it's actually shooting out feces, and that requires muscular movement, so then that's what Rav was referring to. So those were the different types of pirchus. Now the question is, at what point in the shechita do we require pirchus in order to be a raya that the animal was alive during the shechita? Omer of Chista, pirchus she'amru besof shechita. The way that I was taught was that the dinim of pirchus is that they all are measured at the end point of the shechita, which I explain as meaning, my besof shechita, that must mean it has to be during the actual shechita. And all that I was taught meant to exclude a case where just at the beginning of shechita, there the pirchus is insufficient. La fuki tchilat shechita dolo. I'll prove it to you. I mean, it's not what I was taught. I was only taught there was besof shechita. I'm just tiny that it can't literally mean besof shechita. And I'll tell you why I say this. Because our Mishnah said that a behema daka, shepashtaya davelo hichzira, is psula. So if a smaller animal, so a sheep, a goat, actually had extended a hand, meaning a foreleg, and lo hichzira, it never contracted the muscle, so then it's possible. Now, when do you think that it would say it's possible? Because remember, this is how Tosfos says Masbir. It says she'ina elo tzaz nafesh. That's just a sign of the animal's expiration. But when did that take place? I mean, if it took place all the way at the end of the shechita, you're telling me that it has to live until mamish, the end of the shechita, and only then we have to see that it's going to extend its leg. I mean, that's considered to be a expire. How long is it supposed to take after the shechita that it's supposed to expire? I mean, you said, this is medayik, you said it's in elo tzas nefesh. I mean, the nefesh has to be hotzai after the shechita. Why does it have to go on living till after the shechita? That doesn't make sense. Elalav be'amtzar shechita. That's where I understand that when it says b'sof shechita, it doesn't mean literally sof shechita. It means during the shechita, right before the end. Omer le'Rava, not necessarily. It might really mean b'sof shechita, literally. And after the shechita, it would need to contract a limb. Why? Because the point is not that it has to be living at that time, but the point is that if it doesn't show that sign, ani omer, koshe nas osakin b'sof shechita, then it means that it had actually died technically, that was before. And therefore, if it was before, so then it could be before even the rove of the shechita. So it's true, of course it doesn't mean that it has to keep living. The only thing is that if I don't see that it lived that long, then I cannot be sure that it was alive even at the point that I did the shechita. And therefore, I need this as a siman. So it's wrong to say that this is like just a binary issue. Well, either it's alive or dead at this point. That's not the point. The point is, if I don't know that there's a tzas nefesh at the end of shechita, I cannot know at what point it was actually dead before, and maybe it died before the gemar shechita. So that's not a raya. Actually, Nachum Bar Yitzchak says, when it says pirchus, it could be even at the beginning of shechita, in exactly the opposite logic. If it's still showing signs of life at the beginning of shechita, then that means that it lived until the shechita was nigmar. And that would be, pirchus omru would be even betchilat shechita. Omru Nachum Bar Yitzchak, where do I tell you this from? Because look, it says in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon says that if you hold like Rabbi Eliezer, then if you shechted a mesukenet in the middle of the night, and you had no idea whether it actually was mefarcheset or not, and then in the morning you come back, and you find the walls are splattered with blood, that is enough for you to know that it's kosher, because if you hold like Rabbi Eliezer, that zinka, which means shooting blood, it's considered to be a pirchus, so over here you see that it was zinka. Now, let me just add one additional very important point to my proof. Because Shmuel explained that when the Mishnah said kotalim, it did not mean the walls of the room. It meant the walls of the Beis HaShechita were covered with blood. Now, why do I have to add that important point to Shmuel? Well, because my point is that Iamrit Bishlama Betchilat Shechita, if you're going to tell me that that zinka could have taken place even at the beginning of Shechita, and Pirchus at the beginning of Shechita is sufficient to prove vitality, then, okay, then it makes sense that now I know that it was zinka. But if you're going to tell me that you need to have Pirchus at the end of Shechita, how do you know when the zinka was? All you have proven is that there was definitely a zinka shooting out of blood. That's all you've proven. But you don't know whether that was mamish right at the beginning, in which case it wouldn't prove anything. Must be that it does prove something. Now, why do I say it has to be the Kisle Beit HaShechita? What would be wrong if I didn't know Shmuel? Because if it was a reference to the Kotalim of the actual room, so then I would be able to tell by the angle that the blood hits the wall, I would be able to tell at what point in the Shechita this took place. If I've got an animal which I'm shechting while it's down on the ground, and I see that the zinuk was all the way on top, that is definitely the onset of the zinuk. And that doesn't prove anything, maybe, because it's only at the Tchila Shechita, but it's only if it's all the way on the bottom that I see that it was a zinuk b'sof shechita. But it doesn't mean anything about the walls of the room at all. It only means that the neck was covered with blood. That obviously could have happened at the beginning of shechita, right? And nonetheless, it's saying that it's good. So clearly, if we add Shmuel into the mix over here, it must be that even a zinuk b'tchilat shechita is sufficient. And since zinuk is essentially a pirchus, it would mean that any of the pirchusim that we've been talking about, those pirchusim would be kosher at the beginning of shechita. Because ela yamret b'sof shechita, leichush dilma b'tchilat shechita zinka. Well, maybe that's not true. Maybe zinuk is not the equivalent of pirchus. Maybe zinuk is super-duper pirchus. Maybe it's better than a standard pirchus. So Dilma Shaini Zinuk to Adif? What? Of course it's not Adif. Read the Mishnah. Rebbe Eliezer says it's enough if it was just Zinkas. How can you tell me it's better? The whole point that Rebbe Eliezer is making is, well, you don't really need such a super duper pirchus like you're talking about, Yad Varegel. Zinuk is enough. Well, no, wait a minute. Rebbe Eliezer, remember, was referring to Rebbe Gamliel. Rebbe Gamliel said you need to have pirchus both biyad uberegel. So legabe that, Rebbe Eliezer is saying both biyad uberegel. You could just have zinuk and that would be enough. But maybe it's more than a pirchus of either yad or regel. So maybe enochinami, it may be kal. Mina Rebbe Gamliel, because Rebbe Gamliel needs both Yad Varegel, that's why he used the word of Daya. But as far as talking about the regular Pirchus, according to the Chachamim, which is the Rov, and they say either Yad or Regel, maybe Zinuk is better. Could be. And in which case, when we were saying that the Pirchus has to be, that was your Kabbalah, the Pirchus has to be at the end of the Shechita, that's talking about this low-quality pirchus, but maybe zinuk could be enough even at the beginning. Omer, Ravina, Omer, Lissamer, Bar Chakiloi. This, actually, Akshiba, Avur Devar Avuvram, the father of the son of Avuvram. Now, that usually is Avuvram, if he's the father of the son of Avuvram. So it's a rather unusual way to refer to somebody. So Rashi says, this is basically just telling me that the son of Avuvram, whatever his name was, that undoubtedly is what they used here, but the son of Avuvram was better known than the father. So to identify him, they said, you know, the famous Joe Avuvram's father, which is Joe Avuvram's, was Avuvram. All right. But anyway, so what he said, actually, some say it isn't this funny language of the father of Avuvram, it's the brother of Bar Avuvram. Anyway, he showed that this makes no sense, because how could you say that Zinuk is better than the Rabbanan who hold Obiad Oberega? Again, read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, ad shitefakes obiyad oberegel, right? So now, what was that ad? Ad means, oh no, oh, only if it gets up to that level. So what were they referring to? If they were referring to Rebbe Gamliel was saying that you need more. You need yad and regel. So then they would have had to say, no, it's enough. Daya or kivan shepirchas obiyad oberegel. But since they used the word that you need to have ad until you get to the point, they must be referring to Rebbe Eliezer. And Rebbe Eliezer is saying that it's enough if it's just zinuk. And the Rabbanan respond to us and say, no, zinuk is not enough. It's got to actually move yad or regel, which means that moving yad or regel is better than zinuk. It doesn't matter whether it's both yad v'regel, like Rebbe Gamliel, or whether it's just either yad v'regel or libe Rabbanan. It's still going to be better than Zinuk. So don't tell me that maybe Zinuk is different because Zinuk is better. Because E'adif, my ad, if you're telling me that Zinuk is better than either Yad or Regel, then why does it say only until the point where they actually, on the contrary, Zinuk is more? So you see that the least Raya is Zinuk. So don't tell me that I can't bring a Raya from Zinuk that it's enough if it's Petrila Shkita. If Zinuk is enough for Petrila Shkita, Kol Shekain, the others are sufficient, because they're even better. Rava Amar? Rava says, I say just the opposite. The Pirchus has to be all the way at the end of the Shechita. After you finish Shechting, there has to be a sign of Pirchus. And I'll tell you how I know it. Because Amar Rava Mina Minala. Because the Braita learns out the famous Loshon of the Pasuk, Shor, O Chesev, O Eiz, Ki Yivaleid, V'haya Shivat Yamim Tachat Imo, U'miyum Hashmini, V'hala Yeratzele Korban Ishe LaHashem. Now, let's think about that for a minute. So, first of all, the Loshonos at the beginning, Shor, O Chesev, that means they have to be literally either or. Because if it could be even a mixture, a Kelayim, in which you would have a hybrid between the different meaning, so then you wouldn't have to separate them so clearly. And the idea over the year is shor v'chesed. But if you're telling me that it's shor o kesev, it means we want you to identify every species, not a hybrid. O A's means even if it's a mutation, it's not a genetic hybrid, but it has mutations in that it looks like it has genes from another species in it. And okay, not because it actually was mixed, but that itself puzzles. That's called nidme, a mutation that makes one species look like it has genes of another. Ki yivaled. Yivaled means that it has to be born, and not prat b'yotzei dofen, not that it was actually delivered by Caesarean. Shivat yamim, prat l'mechusr zman. You know that Caesarean was very, very common among farmers because, I mean, it wouldn't be a very carefully done Caesarean, but if an animal had been injured and so on and was dying, then they would rip out the vlad to at least get a chance for the vlad to survive. So it's not as if, like, we're talking about having this beautiful veterinarian hospital right there. We're talking about a pretty standard farm procedure of a Caesarean. And shivas yomim, so that means it has to have a full shivas yomim from birth, prat l'mechusr zman. Less than that is mechusr zman. But here's this strange lashon of tachat imo. And it has to be with its mother, which means prat liyotom. It cannot be an orphan. So what does that mean? When it says in the lashon of the pasuk, vayashivat yamim tachat imo, that doesn't mean that it has to actually survive with the mother. There's two completely different dinner. One is the dinner b'chusr zman, prat l'mechusr zman. It has to be shivas yamim. And then it also has to be at one point a tachat imo. There has to be some point at which it was together with its mother. And that's because we have two psukim, really. Because l'gabi b'chor, it said shivat yamim yiye im imo. It doesn't say tachat imo. So to say that it was im imo, so when it says over here tachat imo, it doesn't really mean together with its mother. It means it's taking the place of its mother. That is to say that it lived for 7 days, even though the mother had died, but the child is alive. And the child lived for 7 days, so then it's kosher. But it does say that it needs to be tachat imo. So that means it can't be an orphan. Now, the question, of course, is, as is raised in the Pirates of Penzance, at what point makes it an orphan? I mean, here's the pirates, they're 60 years old, and, you know, and they're still bemoaning the fact that they're all orphans, and the general saves his life at 80 years old by saying, how could they not be merachem on a poor orphan boy? And they all break into tears, this poor 80-year-old orphan boy. You know, so what do we mean over here when we're talking about not a poor orphan calf? I mean, okay, so is that like the mother has to live for 5 years, 10 years? What makes it an orphan? So let's try to understand what an orphan would mean. So, hayatom hechidan. Ilema dielidete ime. Do you mean that the mother gave actual birth to this child? And then the mother died. So, okay. So is the mother supposed to go on forever? Leolam teise vitesil. I mean, obviously, at one point or another, the mother can die. No. It's no longer no gay other child. It must be what? That first it died and then the child was born, but then it could only have happened through a Caesarean. But we have a separate pasuk to tell me about Caesarean. That was from Kiyivoled, means it cannot be delivered by Caesarean. So Elipshita, what are we talking about? It didn't live together with its mother, and that at the same moment that the mother gave birth, it died immediately. So that must mean, if it actually gave birth, it has to mean that the mother lived momentarily after giving birth. But what that proves is that the chius of the mother had to extend after the birth for an instant, right? So if you're going to tell me that the measurement of chiyut is after the birth for a second, okay, then that makes sense. So that would explain why I need a pasuk to be mamayet an orphan. But if there's no din of requiring chiyuta at the end of the process, so then why would we have this pasuk? It means that the animal is sort of either or. Either it was delivered by a living mother, or it was delivered by Caesarean, which is Kiev Aleid. And therefore, if I do need a pasuk, a special pasuk, to tell me that an orphan is usur, that means that the chias that we need is a chias that goes on for an instant beyond the leida. So that means, says Rava, that where the Torah requires chias, the chias has to extend beyond the process that we're talking about. In which case here, by the shechita, the same thing is true. The Torah is telling us it needs to be chai and then shachut. And if it was shachut without chias an instant later, it would be the same thing as the psul of this animal that is born without the chias of the mother a moment later. That shows me that it has to be at the end of the shechita. Omar Rava, actually, if we're going to define what Pirchas is, there is a lovely braita that sums it up for you. And I say, this braita is the halacha. Hilchata ki hai matnita. Behima daka, if you're talking about a small animal, so then if it was pashtaya da velo yichzira, is psula. So, as we learned before, if it just extended a foreleg and it did not contract the muscle to pull it back in, that is not a pirchus. But b'med varim amurim, so here the braita talks out the implications. When do we say this dafka on a foreleg? Because it says yad. Avol berego, if it would have done the same thing with a hind leg, then bein pashta v'lo kafafa, bein kafafa v'lo pashta, kishera. So the muscular contraction in either direction of the hind leg would be sufficient to prove that it is alive. But medvarim amurim, and when do we have this entire issue of hind leg or foreleg? All of that is only nogea behima daka, which actually moves its forelegs without need for the muscles to pull it out. Avol begasa, bein biyad, bein beregel. If you're talking about a big animal, a cow, so then it doesn't matter whether we're talking about a foreleg, a hind leg, the extent of the muscular contractions in either direction is sufficient on either of those. And you can see the immense difference even actually if you look in the musculature. So begasa, bein biyad, bein beregel, bein pashata velo kafafa, bein kafafa velo pashata. It doesn't matter what direction it goes, extension, retraction, it's all a perfectly good simen of its being alive. They will not stam move as part of their expiration. And if you're talking about a bird, any type, the slightest thing, afilo lo rifrei fela gabo, kapo, all that it does was fluttering a little bit with its wings, or maybe it was kishkesh znavo, or it just wiggled the tail a little bit, that is considered to be pirkus. Well, I understand. So I know how to read the braita. What is Rebbe telling us? We don't need this braita. He's saying this braita. Every single one of these dinim is clear from the Mishnah. It says in our Mishnah, Behema daka shepashta yada velo yizira psula she'ena elo tzat nefesh. Now, obviously, we know how to read. I mean, if it says in the Mishnah yad, it obviously means only a yad and not a regel. Yes, the braita spells that out, but I mean, listen, we're not in kindergarten over here that I need the braita to spell that out. And additionally, it says daka, which means only a daka. But agasa, we don't need this. Another thing, that if you know how to read, I mean, I don't need the braita. So what is Rava saying? Of course the halacha is like the braita. Look, I mean, even if you didn't know Rava and you didn't know how to read, once you read the braita, you see that that's in the Mishnah. So anyway, you would know that that's the halacha. So what's Rava saying? Hey, Did the Mishnah say anything about birdies? No. That's what Rava is saying. Of itstrichale, the dinim of the bird, about the fluttering and the moving of the back tail of the bird, that it didn't say in the Mishnah. That's why Rava was saying, if you want to have all of the dinim put together, all in one convenient place, look at this braita, and it will tell you exactly what the requirements are of Pirchus across the board. Great. Now, we enter into a whole new world. This is the world of Machshava. And, of course, we're used to the dinim of Machshava from the sugyas at great length in Zvachim, about Machshava Schutz L'Zmano, Machshava Schutz L'Mekeimai, about certain karbonas, like a chatas and a pesach, of a Machshava Shalo L'Shma. Those were all in Yonim that had to do with Kachim. Is there such a thing as a machshava that could pass or shchita even for chulin? Well, actually there is. And that would be a machshava for avodah zarah. So if you shechted something for avodah zarah, so then it becomes takrovas avodah zarah. Takrovas avodah zarah is completely usur. Even b'hana'ah it's usur. Now the question is this. Who defines that? Is it a din in the shochet? I mean, because when it comes to kachim, it's a din in the kohen, right? So is the shochet of chulin the equivalent of the kohen who's doing the avoda of kachim? Or perhaps the owner, the shochet's just doing like the job for the owner. But it's not as if there's like an avoda of shlita. So maybe the owner's machshava that the animal should be brought to Avodah Zarah might be sufficient to have a psul of Avodah Zarah because the act of Shlita was done, according to the das of the owner, was done for a particular Avodah Zarah. So what's the halacha in these cases? Well, HaShochet LeOved Kochavim.
Don't we need to introduce this Mishnah?
Yes, Doc we do. Here. Doc is here. Dear Doc, come in, please. Is Doc here? Maybe he ran away.
Sukta Helika Mishnah.
Oh, that good old sounds of Litvisha Yiddishkeit, I'm telling you. brings us right back home. Yes, indeed. You can't think too much of yourself when you get that kind of introduction, you know? It's down to business. Okay. So Doc has introduced our business. Thank you. Ashochet la'oved kochavim. So in this case, a Jew is a shochet, and a goy comes in with his animal and tells him he'll pay him to do the shchita. Fine. So he does the shchita for an oved kochavim. That shchita is kosher. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer says, no, that shchita is pasul. Omar Rabbi Eliezer, look, even if you shechted an animal in which a goy was going to have a tiny portion of it, so afilu shechata le'echol ovik kochavim mechatzar kaved shela, you're going to give him like the least chash of a piece, you'll give him a piece of the diaphragm, you know, and he's a partial owner to 1/1000th of the value of the carbon, of the behemoth. It would still be possible. Because you have an owner of this carbon who is dedicating it for avodas kochavim. Shestam machshevet oved kochavim avodat kochavim. So Rebbe Eliezer's shita is that there's always an assumption that a oved kochavim is dedicating whatever he can to his idol. And therefore, it would be possible. Now, this is making several assumptions, right? First of all, the obvious one, that Stam Machsheves Ovid Kochavim is Avodas Kochavim, but it's making the further assumption that the owner, as opposed to the Shochet, and the one who's doing what was supposedly done for Avodas Kochavim, the owner can define on his own something that the Shochet did not have in mind. And he would make the just normal Shechita of a Jew into a Shechita for Avodas Zarah because he's the one who's giving it to Avodah Zarah. So this is fascinating. So it's called Zeh Mechashev V'Zeh Oved. You've got one person who's doing the Aveda, so to speak, in this case, the Shochet. You've got another person, the owner, and he's saying even if he's just a tiny proportion owner, that's sufficient to asser this korban, so to speak, being given to the idol, is enough to asser the behemoth. Wow. Rabbi Yossi says, no, that's ridiculous. Look, the concept of machshava is essentially a concept that applies to mugdashim, right? I mean, that's where we learn out all these dinim of chutz lizmano and chutz lemekomo. And it says over there the word lo yechashev, which we darshan to mean lo yachshov, that there's an actual iser of machshava. And even there, in that primary place where the Torah discusses this idea of machshava, so ma b'mokam shem achshava poselat ben b'mugdashim, it all is defined by the Kohen. Doesn't matter what the owner was thinking. Ein hakol holeich ela achar ha'oved. So mokam she'ein machshava poselat b'chulin, a place where the psul, this doesn't make much sense because obviously machshava is poselat, because at least when it comes to avodah zarah, machshava is poselat. The Gemara will ask what that's supposed to mean. But in a place where we don't have a primary din of machshava, and that is in chulin, so for sure, but we're going to have this extended machshava that even the owner who's not, he's 500 miles away somewhere, and his machshava is going to be koveya that this is a shchita for avodah zarah. That doesn't make any sense. En odin shelo yeh hakol olech ela achar hashochet. Now, the Tanoim here, the Tanakama versus Rebbe Eliezer, apparently both of them hold of the shita of Rebbe Eliezer Rebbe Yossi. What's that shita? The Tanya, Omar Rebbe Eliezer Rebbe Yossi, Shamati, I was mekabo from my Rebbe, Shehaba'alim mifaglim. Oh, now it starts to make a little bit of sense. Truth is that even Rebbe Eliezer, who says his Kal v'chomer, they both hold that the Baalim and not the Kohen, meaning even not the Kohen, can make a korban pigel by having a kavana to eat it, let's say, chutz lizmanek or chutz lemekaymek. And therefore, they both agree that what the owner is thinking is going to be koveyad, it's din. It's just the machlokas between them is that the Tanakama says, but why would we think that the guy is thinking about avodah zarah? If we heard him and he said, I am shechted, having this animal shechted in order that Yoshke Pipik should eat from it. Okay, I understand that. Then, yes, the shrita is pasul. But if he didn't say it, then we don't think such things because we don't believe that stam machshevet oveh kochavim la'avodat kochavim lo amrinan. We don't assume that they're thinking about avodah zarah, whereas Rebbe Eliezer holds, no. Even if you didn't hear any indication that he wants this to be for avodah zarah, it's an umdana that stam machshevet oveh kochavim la'avodat kochavim. Then comes along Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah, and Rabbi Yossi says, what do you mean? Kal v'chomer hadvarim. So Rabbi Yossi is coming to argue on both of them. And also Rabbi Yossi lemeimar, even if we know that his machshav is avodah zarah, and he says so, and he announces it, and he puts it up with a sign, wouldn't make the least bit of difference. Because afagav the shama'ine dechashim, it's all very nice that he has the machshav, but who cares what his machshav is? Ze mechashev v'ze oved lo amrinan. There's no such thing as one person doing the Aveda and another person having the Kavana for the Aveda. And therefore, in this case, we couldn't care less what his opinion is. We asked the Sheikh, the Sheikh's a perfectly kosher guy with a long beard and a kapota. And, who cares what the Oved Kochavim is talking about? So that means we've got three different shitas. The first two shitas are making the assumption that yes, you definitely can have a machshava. The question is, did you have the machshava? So the Tanakhama says there's no reason for us to assume you had such a machshava. And Rebbe Eliezer says, no, it's tam machshavas avodah zarah, it's an umdan, it's definitely for avodah zarah. The third shita, which is Rabbi Yossi, is that who cares what this guy had a machshava? We don't hold of the underlying assumption over here that one person can do the shlita and the other person can have the machshava. That's one way of understanding the Mishnah. Ikari Amri. There's another way to understand the Mishnah. And that is that the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer were arguing where Shamine Dechashiv Plige. He said, I am thinking about Avodah Zarah. So that the Tanakhama says, look, who cares what he's thinking about? Ki Amrinat Zemechashiv Zelved, Hane Mile Bifnim. This din, that one person can do the Avodah, namely the Kohen, and another person can have a machshava, namely the Baalim. That may be true, but it's only true inside of the Beis HaMikdash, where the Torah was Bechadesh, this concept of machshava. But Bechutz, where we're applying it to the din of somebody who has a machshava of Avodah Zarah, nah, chutz mifnim lo yafinan. We don't learn the dinim outside of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning we don't learn dinim of Makshevas Avodas Kochavim from the dinim that have to do with the concept of Pigol and so on. Over there, yes, it's true, because we have that extra limud, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosef, it says HaMakrivoto, which adds the Baalim. Okay, but it doesn't say anything about that. Benogei Avodah Zarah, so even though inside of the Beis HaMikdash, we do have a concept of Zemech Hashem Oved. Outside of the Beis HaMikdash, we do not. And that Tanakhama says there's no problem. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer says, no, we actually do learn out Chutz Bifnim. And the same way that Zemech Hashem Oved will create Pigol inside of the Beis HaMikdash, Yalfinot Chutz Bifnim, and since the owner's makshava is enough to passel it, and we know that he would passel it even if he hadn't said that he passeled it, because we have an umdana, that part, yes, Rabbi Eliezer goes further than the Tanakhama, and then we have the third sheet of Rabbi Yossi, and what Rabbi Yossi was disagreeing with was not the part about the Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Yossi was coming to disagree with the etzem thought that even bifnim there's a concept of Zemech Hashem Oved. So comes along Rabbi Yossi Lomema, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Afilu bifnim nami. There's no such thing of a Kohen who's shechting properly and a Baalim who's thinking of eating chutz l'zmanot. We couldn't care less about what the Baalim is doing, because he learns that HaMakriv is not the owner. HaMakriv is also the Kohen. Wow. Okay, so we've got some pretty serious new issues here that are being raised after the first part of the daf, which was pretty straightforward, just the question of at what point in the Shechita essentially, and what are the different levels of Pirchus, Zinuk, Kishkush, and so on. Here we have these fascinating questions. Is there a concept of Zemech Hashem Zeh Oved Bifnim? If there is, would we be Yalfinan Chutz Bifnim? And would we use that concept to apply even in Chulin that's being shechted, where the owner has a makshava for Avodas Kochavim? And furthermore, we have this sub-machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer. We have this machlokas about how far we would go on that. Would we also have an umdana, that an owner who's a goy definitely is a makshava of Avodah Zarah, or not?